We're drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome into the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Ferlin.
I'm Amy.
We have an absolutely stacked show to get to. Let's get right down to it. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow us at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I am at CFL Hottieball.
Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. We're on Instagram, just search Piffles Pod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. As always, the show is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. This week's show, like I said, a big show. Because the Riders won, that's big enough as it is. The Riders have a win. Owen's gone. Juan is here. Hopefully for not too long. But we're going to recap that Riders Ticats game. 37-20 was the score for the Riders, moving their record to 1-2. We don't have a game to preview this week. Riders are on their bye. So instead of that, let's just talk to, I don't know, the new man in charge, CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi. That sounds good?
Sure.
Okay, well, we'll talk to him in a little bit. We'll have our Coney Island Piffles player profile, Hottie Bowl, a rant, and we'll make our Piffles picks. So let's get right down to it. Like I said, game against Hamilton, 37-20. Riders won. It really should have been 44-13 if you take out that pick six at the beginning of the game there. That was on the Hamilton one in goal line. Three burning questions. One, who looked good?
Everybody. You can't put it any better. Kevin Glenn had his best game of the year, and he's been doing all right all year. Naaman Roosevelt, 160-plus yards receiving. Those are the two that stood out the most to me.
You know what stood out the most to me, and it stood out the most to Alex as well? We had a four-man rush
all
for most of the
game.
The only time we didn't rush four was when we had injuries on the defensive line, and we basically just put three out there to give some guys some rest. That was really what stood out the most to me.
And look what happened. We got pressure. We won.
Even though they only had one quarterback sack, Willie Jefferson was the only one that got a sack that game. There were a couple of others that were made, but penalties offset and it took them away. But that D-line was everywhere. Willie Jefferson and A.C. Leonard, just all game long. It didn't matter who they were lined up on. Whoever was lined up on Xavier Fulton, wow. I've never seen Fulton dominated in a game like that before. It was absolutely incredible. So if that's what we're going to see out of this D-line, I'm excited because that was awesome.
Well, that's what we all predicted before the year, that our D-line would be a spot of strength. And as long as they're giving them a chance to succeed, this is what happens. So, yes.
And a big shout-out to friend of the show, Bakari Grant.
That's
earning himself another breakfast, another box of toys for kids. Almost had another one if he didn't slow up for that Daron Carter pass.
That was a perfect pass on a little swing pass behind the line of scrimmage to Daron Carter. Had Bakari Grant open by about 5 yards behind the defender. Just the throw was perfect. Bakari probably didn't think that he was going to get the ball there.
You know, the best part about his actual touchdown, as soon as he scored, stared right at our group in the end zone, at Ferlin and I and our friend, just stared right at us. He was sitting there. He was picturing the Huevos Rancheros. How's your wallet?
It's lighter.
Good.
And it's all for a good cause, with toys going to kids in the process as well too. So
he said he's had a meeting with Hopes for Home, or Hope for Home.
Hope's Home.
There we go. Had a meeting with Hope's Home this week. So
yeah, good things are coming, and that's
good on him.
We're super happy about that. Even in a game like this, did anybody look bad?
Dan Clark and his penalties.
Make sure you at him.
Gotta be done. That was the one thing that stood out. He took a fair amount of penalties throughout the game. Outside of that, not really.
Kind of went as good as it could have went. I mean, not sure what else you expect with the Riders going against what appears to be the worst team in the league right now. But yeah, there's not really a whole lot that you can pick apart about that game.
Well, Steve, you took mine. I had Dan Clark on my list. But I want to just say how different this defense was from, obviously, the last week. They obviously didn't give up 43 points. The coverage was incredible. They played man pretty much the entire game for the most part, zone in there mixed in. But Chris Jones, his game calling for the defense was phenomenal. They basically gave up 13 points, and that was absolutely incredible.
And it's not like Hamilton's a, you know, has a nobody back behind center. and they have weapons in the receiving core. We just
Kolaros was running around for his life the entire game, and it was great to see. The pressure was there. Defense was making plays. The calling from the coaching was great. It was the first time in a long time that Chris Jones didn't outcoach himself.
And one other thing, Steve McAdoo, he actually ran the ball. We had, 17 carries for Cam Marshall?
12 carries for Cam Marshall, 17 in total, but yeah.
A run game. Imagine what happens when you actually try. You get rid of the longest run, which was, 40 yards? Still, the average isn't great, but the attempts were there, and the timing of the runs were great. The draw play in the third quarter, I think it was, to get down to the goal line. It was a 14-yard pickup on second down. It was just a perfectly timed call, and those all seemed to work out. I can't get enough of the coaching staff in this game. The coaching staff was pretty much flawless to me.
Considering we've been pretty hard on Jones and McAdoo, they deserve all the credit for this win. Well, the players deserve a fair chunk, but
I mean, they did their part too.
Right. But the coaches finally put them in a position to succeed, and they did. And that game really was never in doubt.
No, even when they were down 7-2, we thought right away after that pick six, oh great, here we go again. But next drive, Kevin Glenn just marched the team downfield and scored a touchdown on that drive. We took the lead and we never looked back after that.
I think what we're seeing is the perfect style of offense for Kevin Glenn. They don't go deep very often, although he is more accurate than people give him credit for over the top. I was reading somewhere, because we've been hearing that he just can't hit that deep ball. He's something like 48% on his throws over 16 yards, puts him third in the league. So he's actually above average there, which that number actually shocked me. But
and Namon Roosevelt going deep, making a couple really nice catches as well. We get him and Daron Carter going. They made a focus of getting Carter involved early, slant and hitch patterns, and getting him the ball and letting him make plays. If they keep doing that, Roosevelt's going to run wild on opposing secondaries. It's just going to be fun to watch. So if they build off that, especially with a week off here with a bye, that's huge. Now, huge. How important was this game, like I mentioned, going into a bye week? Was winning this game pretty much paramount?
It was a must win. I mean, as far as you can get three games into a season, they had to have this one. They've got a tough schedule coming up until Labor Day. You know, we play Calgary, then Toronto, BC twice, Edmonton, Winnipeg twice. That is not an easy schedule coming up. This was the free space on the bingo card, and they had to make sure they dabbed it off.
I'm not going to lie. The beginning of the season was starting to look a lot like 2015 and 2016 with early losses, close games, just, you know, letting it get away in the last quarter, that kind of thing. So yeah, this definitely is a huge confidence booster for the players and for the coaches. Definitely a must win, and sure glad we got it in the way we did.
And you could see it in the players' responses on Twitter. They were all excited after the game. It was a huge team win. Everybody, there was just a weight off their shoulders. And going into a bye week, they can all relax with their family, their friends, do whatever it is they do on their week off. That part is huge. They're not coming back like Hamilton was after their bye week, you know, after getting destroyed by Toronto. You don't want to spend that week off in a state of disappointment, so they can actually enjoy and celebrate their week off.
Now, obviously, other than the win, the other big story about that game coming out of it is Will Hill of the Ticats being suspended for one game. News came out today. He's getting suspended for one game and also fined. Grabbed one of the refs by their collar. Now, it looked like he was trying to explain himself about a hold, but he grabbed the ref's collar, and you can't do that. One game suspension and a fine. Is that enough to protect the refs?
Based on the past, absolutely. That's kind of all the CFL could have expected to get to suspend him.
And see, I have an issue with that, and I know they have to go based on previous precedent. We've got a new commissioner. He's got to set his tone, and I feel like even though we know had they gone more than one game, the PA would have come back and appealed it, and it probably would have come back to a game, he had a chance to set the tone and say, this is not acceptable. There is no reason under any circumstances you ever touch an official. And what nobody's talking about is that wasn't the first time on that drive that he made contact with an official. Inadvertent or not, he caught a ref upside the head during an altercation earlier in the drive. You have to make sure that the refs are protected, and I don't feel like they did that.
It should be noted that the one-game suspension, he's losing that paycheck, but the fine was actually not for grabbing the official, but for punching one of the riders on that exact same play. So,
So he is losing two game checks, which fine, but
see, and I'm more on this on Steve's side on this. This you have to set a precedent. I don't care. It's not a new rule that you can't touch ref. That rule has always been in play. Look what the NHL did with Dennis Weidman. They made an example out of him last year and gave him 20 plus games. That's 25% of the season. Like, you got to make an example out of these guys so that it never happens again. You have to do more. You have to protect your officials. Whether you like the officials or not, or how bad they're officiating the game, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. You control your temper. If you're going to show a ref that, hey, you were grabbed in the collar, grab your collar, grab a teammate's collar. You don't grab the ref's collar ever. And I don't think that the CFL did enough on that to really set a tone. But we'll ask Commissioner Ambrosi about that in a little bit when we have him on, just to see if that was part of the plan. I just don't think one game is enough. Now, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and check out piffles.podcast.com for much more. And don't forget to join our CFL Piffles Pick'em group. Beat us, win some prizes. Moving on, let's get to this week's Coney Island Piffles profile. I really want to know. Tell me who are you? This week's Piffles player profile brought to you by Coney Island Poutine Cafe, the best poutine in the prairies. Check out their two locations in Regina. This week, Rider offensive lineman, second round draft pick in the 2017 draft, Dariush Bladek joins us on the phone from Florida. Dariush, thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
So I understand you're spending the bye week back at home with your family. How's that going?
Going really good, actually. Out here near Disney. It's called Disney Springs. We're at a restaurant over here, and I'm enjoying it. I'm getting some good workouts over here. You know, the weather's just a little bit hotter than Regina, so I've been having some really good workouts over here as well, and it's really nice to see my mom and dad. You know, they're really big supporters of me, and it's great to have them here.
It hasn't been hot enough for you in Regina?
No, you know, I'm not going to lie. The week leading up into the Hamilton game, I was sort of surprised with how hot it was. And I was like, wow, 91. I was like, I didn't know it got this hot. Fahrenheit, of course. But it's different. At least you get a breeze there. Here in Florida, you have a lot of humidity where literally I'm walking out to the field and I'm starting to sweat, and it's just like I forgot how humid it could be here in Central Florida.
Well, enjoy the heat in Regina next week when you come back as well, because trust me, it doesn't last.
Yeah, I'll be sure to catch a tan while I can.
So take us back to the day of the draft. Where were you, and describe the emotion of being drafted into the CFL?
Well, I had the opportunity. I could have came up to Canada, and I was thinking about maybe headed to Toronto. You know, you could fly right into there from Orlando. But I couldn't bring my whole family. So in doing so, I stayed home at the house, and I had my offensive line coach from college. I had my high school coach that's also my speed coach. Had all the closest people in my life, and they were all there supporting me. It was a very emotional day. You know, the draft was very unexpected for me. I didn't know what was really going to be going on. And fortunately, I ended up in, you know, Regina for a great team. And, you know, I was just actually talking to Mike Davis about it on the sideline after the win. And I told him, you know, after they passed up on me at 2, I was sort of bummed because I enjoyed the feel of Regina, I enjoyed the fans, I enjoyed the team, the coaching staff that we worked with when we were there, and the stadium was beautiful. But, you know, sure enough, they were able to get me. And, you know, I think it was sort of meant to be because I'm obviously getting some playing time. And it's a great learning curve for me. And I have some great veterans around me that is going really good. So I'm really happy about it.
Now, how tough is it to adjust to the pro game from playing in college at Bethune-Cookman?
The biggest difference for me, you know, I did have my experience with the Baltimore Ravens. And, I mean, for that, it was a little bit your angle, your set depth, and how fast you come off the ball. And it was a three-point stance compared to my two-point stance when I was with Bethune-Cookman. But with me so far being here in the CFL, my biggest thing has been just really learning the angles of the game. You know, I got a little bit of experience at the combine, but those are against rookies as myself. And as talented as they are, they're learning just like I'm learning. Things that these pros have been mastering for the last couple of years. So to really sit there and learn the angles, learn the depth you need to set with, learn the scheme, get used to the 12th man being on the field, find him where he is in the protection. You know, those are a couple of the things. I had some frustration with the playbook the first couple of days of camp, but now I'm really settled in. I'm really comfortable with it, and those have been really the biggest curves for me so far.
What's your overall impression of Saskatchewan so far in your short time here?
Passionate. Passionate, caring. I think it's a homey place for me. You know, it reminds me it's not too big, not too small, and you know, a lot of the people here really do care about you. And win or lose, they're behind you, filling the stadium to max capacity. And it's great to know you always have that. I really enjoyed it. I wanted to get my parents to come up instead of me coming to Florida because I really didn't want to leave. I wanted to still work out with my guys and still be around the facility and be in the city. But, you know, my parents couldn't come up. My father has work, so I made the trip down here.
So outside of playing football, what are you like? What keeps you busy?
I think it's just getting settled in, you know, getting the apartment, getting, you know, furniture, TV, bed, you know, really getting myself settled in, finding good places to eat and, you know, finding places to go. My sister and brother actually came up for the first two home games, and fortunately, we were able to pull off a win, and we were trying to find new places. Some of the locals were telling us where to go, so that's really how I keep myself occupied, finding new places to eat.
Now, you're on a day off. You don't feel like doing a thing, so you're going to binge on Netflix. What are you watching?
You know, I haven't found my new binge. I've watched all the Prison Breaks. I've watched, you know, all the Dexters. You know, I've had a really good time with all that. Narcos was one of my really favorites. But I think Escobar, they came out with a series for Escobar, and I really want to check that out. So I think I would do it with that.
So if you had to pick one place, one dream vacation, where are you going and what are you doing?
Interesting question. I know this might sound, I mean, some people might want to go to the hot places and, you know, the beaches, things like that. But I think being in Florida so long, I am a nature guy, and just in general, I have enough of the beaches. I have a big thing. I would like to go on a big cruise or a trip where I could see a bunch of glaciers. Not sure exactly where yet, but really be able to see, like, the whales, glaciers. I think larger-than-life objects just always really draw my attention, and it always seems to amaze me. As big a guy as I am myself, you know, there are creatures that, you know, 20-fold me. So, I don't know. It's kind of crazy, but if I could get on a getaway trip to really see, you know, some glaciers, see some of the amazing things that our Arctic has to offer us, I think that'd be really cool.
And if you weren't a pro football player, what would you be doing right now?
I would be getting my feet wet in the field of assisted living homes, really specializing in the field of dementia, Alzheimer's and Lewy body. My main goal, hopefully, would be over time, work my way up the ladder to become a director of my own assisted living home. And then one day, hopefully, open up my own assisted living home. So,
has that like affected your family before? Is that why you're into that?
No, none of my close relatives have had Alzheimer's or Lewy bodies. I was actually I was a physical therapist major. Then I went to nursing, and I had to do an internship at an assisted living home and study the three stages of Alzheimer's. And for me, it really, I don't know, it just struck me, hit a chord with me. And I really felt like there's a lot more that could be done in that field. And that's a field that I love helping people. So for me, to be able to go and help those people really get as educated as I can to make their life and that transition through that, you know, disease as easy as possible, you know, I found my passion in that. And I thought that's what I want to do.
So kind of a two-part question. What is your favorite food, and what is the best place to eat in Regina that you found so far?
Well, my favorite food, would definitely have to be pierogies, a Polish delicacy, homemade by my mom and dad, with some bacon and onion on it. But if we're talking fast food, I would say pizza. In Regina, I think the name of it's Kay's Kitchen. Joe, my brother, he remembers the place. He told us to go to it. I had a really good steak there.
We may have to check that out here. If you're a pierogi guy, I have to suggest Baba's Food Spot. They do a food truck on Wednesday nights. Yeah, it's called Baba's. They're amazing pierogies here. It's Wednesday at afternoon, Saturday during the day, but I'm not sure where else they do it. But they're a food truck, so they're kind of around the city from time to time. If you ever catch them, try them.
I'm gonna have to, you know, because I don't like frozen pierogies or anything like that. We make them homemade, and when we make them 400 deep. So, you know, I'm looking forward. I'm going to try to get that done while I'm here and maybe bring some up with me if I can. I don't know. I'll have to figure something out. But that would be a great secondary. I'd have to check that out.
Well, Dariush, thank you so much for joining us this week on the Piffles Podcast. We appreciate it.
No, thank you so much. Looking forward to speaking with you more often. Apologize if there was any, you know, exits sounds in the back. I am out having dinner with my family, so.
No, it's all good. Go enjoy that family time.
All right, thank you so much. Have a great night.
You as well. Thank you. Offensive lineman Dariush Playdeck joining us here on the Coney Island Poutine Cafe Piffles Player Profile. Well, moving on here, let's get to our rant of the week.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
So I just have a small beef this week, and it has to do with the schedule. More specifically, Ottawa's schedule. Now, I realize that it absolutely sucks for them, and the team and their fans have every right to be upset with it, but my issue is with a small vocal contingent of their fans. This group is complaining that because the Grey Cup is hosted in Ottawa this year, and it's Canada's 150, and they just won a cup, that Ottawa should have gotten a more beneficial schedule. Again, I'm not disagreeing that their schedule sucks with 3 games in 11 days coming up, and both of their bye weeks in the final 3 weeks of the season. But those are stupid reasons why Ottawa should get a better schedule than any other team, or a better schedule in general. In a perfect world, all teams have balanced schedules. Unfortunately, with 9 teams, that is incredibly hard to do. When you factor in that several CFL teams share stadiums with other teams, and other events going on such as concerts, the schedule maker needs to fit in 9 home dates for each team. You can kind of see why he has a bit of a hard time making it completely fair for everybody. But to say that Ottawa deserves a better schedule just to improve their odds of winning a cup at home during Canada 150, that just seems like an extreme case of homerism that even we at Piffles Podcast don't even have. Last year, Ottawa won the East by virtue of playing in a terrible division. Through the first few weeks, it would appear that the East will be equally bad this year. A great cup-winning team should be able to overcome any adversity. If the Red Blacks deserve to win a cup this year, they're going to.
I find it really hard to argue with that. I mean, the crappy schedule seems to rotate on who gets it every year. We've had it in the past. Edmonton, I believe, had it last year. There's always that one team that just gets hit harder than the rest. But under no circumstances should the team hosting the Grey Cup get any kind of advantage just because they're hosting the Grey Cup.
And to hell with the fact that you won the Grey Cup last year. That for that reason, you should have a harder schedule. You're the champions. Everybody's coming to get you. You're going to get your A game from everybody. You got to bring it back. You don't get an easier schedule just because of that.
Stupid vocal minorities.
Coming up next, we have this week's member of the Hottie Bowl, and then we'll speak to Commissioner Randy Ambrosi.
Piffles Podcast is supported in part by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. A longtime volunteer with your Regina Thunder, Bryn is a proud supporter of local football. Check out BrynWerrett.com, that's BrynWerrett.com, while you enjoy the rest of this episode of the Piffles Podcast.
And now it's time for the Hottie Bowl. Yeah, you want my body and you think I'm sexy.
Come on, sugar, let me know. Quick and painless today. We're working on the fly. So this week, our pick was born July 4th, 1988. So happy belated birthday, sir. In Winnipeg, Manitoba, he made his CFL debut June 1st, 2011 with the Hamilton Tiger Cat. In 2013, he signed with the Edmonton Eskimos, won the Grey Cup there in 2015. He is now playing for the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Any guesses? Hamilton, Eskimos?
Eddie Steele.
There you go. He is 6 feet, 2 inches, 280 pounds. He is number 97 defensive lineman, Eddie Steele.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, and I'm super bummed I was working that day.
Hmm. That's a shame for you.
You really should have been bummed.
Huh?
You really should be bummed about that.
I am. I just said it.
I know. I'm just reiterating. It's actually one of my favorite interviews, him and Derek Dennis.
Oh, them together? That was great. Yeah, so if you get a chance, if you have a few minutes, 20 or so, I think that interview between both of them is, check out our interview with Eddie Steele and Derek Dennis from earlier on this year. They were able to join us, and it was really fun. So check them out on SoundCloud. They're all organized. There's a nice playlist. Check out player interviews. You'll find it super easy. Just check out our SoundCloud. Just search Piffles Podcast. And also, welcome to the Hottie Bowl, Eddie Steele.
Yep.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by the new commissioner of the CFL, Randy Ambrosi, will join us after this.
You are listening to Piffles Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back to the Piffles Podcast. Big news came down officially last week as the new CFL commissioner was announced. He was an O-lineman with the Stamps, Argos, and Eskimos. He played a prominent role in the CFLPA after his playing career and has been quite successful in the business sector since. Joining us now on the line is new CFL commissioner, Randy Ambrosi. Mr. Commissioner, thank you so much for joining us here on the Piffles Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm just not, I think it's going to be a long while before I get tired of the phrase Mr. Commissioner.
First off, congratulations on the new gig. How did you find out that you were going to be named commissioner, and how long did you have to keep it under wraps?
Well, it was tough. I had not heard until about an hour after the Board of Governors met on the Tuesday. But, of course, the story had, there was some traction about the story and that I was going to be selected the week earlier. So there was a lot of speculation and, my inbox was filled with 250 emails and my phone kept ringing and I actually just hid from it all because, you know, I wanted the governors to go through their official process and be respectful of it. So, I guess officially about an hour after the board meeting ended, I got a call to make it official.
Now, one of the first things we've seen from your short tenure so far is the one-game suspension that came down on Tuesday to Will Hill of the Tiger Cats for grabbing a ref by the collar. Now, granted, it looks like he was explaining what happened in the play to the ref, but bottom line, you can't touch an official. Is one game really enough? Was there a discussion of a longer suspension at all?
Yeah, the process was actually, I would call myself an active observer in this particular case because I let Glenn Johnson and the crew, Kevin McDonald, the two of them really, drive the process. You know, I'm like literally on my second day, and I didn't want to disrupt what I know to be a very thorough process. And I watched them carefully. I asked a lot of questions. I listened to the range of possible scenarios, and in the end, I said to them, I wanted them to make a recommendation on what they thought was best, and they were doing that in consultation with several other people, and this was the recommendation they made. I felt it was a fair and just penalty. I should tell you that during the interview that was conducted with Mr. Hill, he was very quick to point out that he knew he had made a mistake. In fact, he said, and I think if you watch the video clip, you know, he said he knew immediately that he had messed up and he released his hand. And so, you know, I think it was a fair and just penalty. And yes, it could have been stiffer for sure. But, you know, at the end of the day, we want to protect our refs. I hope we've sent a very strong message to the players that we won't, that this won't be tolerated. On the other side, balancing it off, I want to keep our players on the field playing football, and hopefully Mr. Hill will learn from this, and we won't have another occurrence.
So you played in the CFL, worked in the Players Association, and have done quite well as a businessman. How did all of that lead to getting this job as the commissioner of the CFL?
Well, You know, in some respects, the answer is just good timing. We had completed the sale of 3MAX, which was the firm I was the president and CEO of. It was actually Canada's oldest investment firm. And that transaction actually wrapped up at the end of December last year, and I was at that point, you know, just thinking about what I was going to do next when I learned that the commissioner had stepped down and that there was a search going to be conducted. You know, after being in the financial services industry for almost 30 years and learning a lot of very valuable lessons and working with some tremendous people, this was just an opportunity to come home to the game that where I started, and a game that I love is so much. It just seemed like the perfect time. And then on top of it, you know, my wife and girls, my wife Barb and I, involved our girls in the process. You know, we were talking to them actively and seeking their feedback, and they were just all so incredibly excited about this for me. And they were all, you know, absolutely convinced, as am I, that this was the perfect time and the right thing for me to do at this stage in my career. And I was fortunate to, have the governor's support to make me the 14th commissioner.
So, big picture, what do you see as your overall vision for the CFL under your watch?
Yeah, bigger, better, stronger, really. You know, bigger, better, stronger. And it's all about growing the business. You know, I think we are sitting in a very strong position today. You know, we've got things we need to work on and improve. But I want to grow the fan base. I want to make the teams all stronger. I want to help the players to be successful. Actually, on the player side, one of the things that I've got, you know, as a real strong priority is to have a really positive relationship with the players and get them to think about, you know, their life after football, because these are all tremendous athletes, world-class athletes, but they're going to, you know, their athletic life will come to an end and they have to start thinking about what to do next, and I'd like to play a role in that. Obviously, I've done well after my career, and I'd like to share the message with them about how many opportunities are out there for them if they just focus on that what next question. I want to do that, and I think we're going to grow our fan base. I am completely convinced, always have been, always will be, that this is an integral part of Canada. That it is, you know, maybe in some ways the best part of Canada, and I want to grow the game. So, you know, the vision is bigger, you know, bigger, better, stronger, and just a lot of work with a great team of people.
Now, speaking of growing the game, attendance is a big issue in places like BC and especially Toronto right now. What needs to be done to bring fans back to the game in these markets?
Well, you know, if you just look at Toronto as an example, and I think if you were to sit down with somebody and ask them if they were challenging you with the turnaround of any business, there would be some preconditions that you would want to have in place in order to give you an odds-on chance of being successful. And in this particular case, if you were going through that exercise, you'd say, well, you want to have absolutely rock-solid ownership, and the second precondition you would want to have is a football facility that is perfectly suited, a stadium perfectly suited to football, and the third is you'd want to have world-class coaching and team administration. And in this case, we have all three of those things in place in abundance with Bell and Larry Tannenbaum as the owners of the team that's working now and playing out of BMO Field, which is a beautiful facility. It's great, and then of course the combination of coach and general manager and the team leadership is absolutely tremendous. So I think we've got everything in place, and you know, we've got a market of roughly 7 million people, and I'm convinced the game will come back. It's Rogers Centre, SkyDome really never worked for the Argos, and I think this is the right environment, and just going to take time and effort. And I feel confident that our ownership are solidly behind us, and we'll get it done.
So, in your first few days on the job, what is your main priority that needs to be fixed in the CFL?
Well, I'm right now, frankly, I'm not so much focusing on what to fix. I'm spending all of my time really listening, and this has been, if I call my secret weapon during my career in the business world. I spend the first number of months in every, you know, new senior job I've had just spending a lot of time talking to people, asking them questions, doing a lot of listening. I'm going to go and do a visit to each CFL city. I'm going to spend time with the, you know, with the teams, you know, asking a lot of questions, observing, you know, what's working in their market, what's not working. You know, what are the best practices that we've got across the league? Doing that and spending time with my team in the league headquarters, getting to know them and helping them to manage the business of the Canadian Football League. Those are my short-term priorities. I think while I'm doing all of that, the foundation of a business plan and a strategy will come to the fore, and I hope sometime in the fall and certainly shortly after the season, to share with the Board of Governors, my strategy, my vision for the game, and that'll be based on a lot of facts and evidence and having done a lot of listening and collaboration with the team. So, really it's an exercise, measure twice and cut once is the famous Carpenter's axiom, and I think it's worth pursuing that model here in Canadian football.
Now, officiating and replays and the lack of consistency, that's one of the main complaints that we hear from fans across the league. What efforts do you see being made under your tenure to have a more consistent game?
Well, I think you'd start I think we would all acknowledge that, reffing is a tough profession, and I'm not sure there is a single league on the planet where, reffing isn't criticized. It's got to be one of the most thankless professions on the face of the earth, and I think we've got, we have criticism of our officiating here. I actually think that our officials do a great job. It's a game played at very high speed, and on a very large field, and with incredibly talented athletes. You're going to have mistakes made. Human error is part of the game. But I also, on the other side, I think we need to look at our processes. We need to find a way to, if we're going to use video replay, to make it as effective as we can be, to make sure that the application of video replay is done consistently. So, again, like the other aspects of the game, my plan is to sit and listen, ask questions and observe, have lots of conversations, seek feedback from as many people as I can, and then start sharing ideas for how we can make improvements. But I think the spirit of your question is a fair one. We want to make the game better, and the consistency of officiating is one of those, but I also want to make sure that our referees know that we appreciate the very difficult job they have, and I think they do a fantastic job of it. Are they perfect? No, but I think they're doing a remarkable job under very difficult circumstances.
So I think it's time we lighten the mood a little bit here. Outside of the office, what kind of things keep you busy?
Well, I've got three fantastic daughters. My wife Barb and I have been married for 31 years, and two of us love to walk. So, you'd often find the two of us out, on one of the trails in our neighborhood, doing a lot of walking. So even on our family vacations, we do a lot of walking. So that's one of our favorite things. We have a family cottage in here in Ontario, and you'll find us there, and if I'm there, you'll probably find my wife and I on the golf course enjoying a round of golf. And I'm still a water skier, although I would argue that at this stage I'm doing less water skiing than I used to. But we're just active. I still work out a lot, which I enjoy, just hanging out with my girls. And it's great now because my girls are old enough to have a beer with their old dad, and nothing better than that.
And if you were to tell the fans of the CFL one thing about you that they don't know, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know if there's one thing that they don't know that I'd want them to know. Like, it's a more important question. Really, at the end of the day, I'd like to get to know the fans. So maybe the answer is I'd like them to get to know me and what, how I think about things. I like to think that I'm a transparent person, and I've got I love life. I'm going, I like going fast and doing big things. But I really don't have all that many secrets, so I don't have anything juicy to share with you.
So you're doing a tour of all the cities in the CFL. When are you going to be in Regina?
I am going to be in Regina for, I believe it is the, oh my gosh, now it's not the first weekend in August. It's the second weekend in August. I've already set my date. I talked to the team a couple of days ago, and we set our schedule, and they've already started making plans for my visit. You'll forgive me.
Is that the BC game?
9 o'clock, and I'm it's late, and I'm a little tired. But I think it is. It's the BC Lions against in that beautiful, beautiful stadium of yours, and I just want to make sure you guys keep it nice and clean for me because I want to see it in its most pristine form when I get there for my first visit.
We'll do our best. I'll talk to everybody.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Ambrosi, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. We look forward to seeing the heights that you can take the CFL in your tenure here, and we look forward to seeing you in August here.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, and have a wonderful evening.
CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi here on the Piffles Podcast. From all accounts, he sounds excited to basically listen and learn and find out what he can about the league, and I'm excited to see where you can take this league and go from there. Now, finally, we have to get to our Piffles Pick'em. Let's get down to it. Oh, crap, because she's not ready.
Well, shocker.
Then maybe we'll just rip through all of ours first and then get to you so you have a second to figure out who you're actually going to pick.
Okay, don't let me. I'm not listening.
Okay. La, 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 la. We're week four. I wish you guys could see this while we're recording because Amy's sitting there with her fingers in her ears so she actually can't hear us. And it's actually really, really cute. So anyway, let's start off here. The four games this week. Again, no Rotter game. Toronto at Winnipeg, Calgary at Montreal, Ottawa at Edmonton, BC and Hamilton. Let's start with Ferlin. Who do you have this week?
I have Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, and BC.
Steve?
Ditto.
I'm going with Winnipeg, Montreal, Ottawa, and Hamilton. Just because Riders can't lose, might as well win somewhere, and that'll be in the rest of the standings. So pick a few Eastern teams there to help us out in the standings. Are you good?
Are you
ready? Amy, are you good? You know who you're going to pick? Do you at least have it in front? You have it in front of you. I got it ready for you.
What?
The games.
Oh, I'm looking at my other things.
Okay. Well, so Toronto, Winnipeg, Calgary, Montreal, Edmonton, home to Ottawa, and BC in Hamilton. Who do you have this week?
Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Hamilton. Ooh. She says reluctantly because I think BC's actually going to win.
I hope not. Let's go Ticats.
Have you watched Hamilton play this year?
Hey.
Although they are due for a breakout. Because they really can't get any worse. Just ask Josh Smith. He did an article, and it was, our offense sucks. Our defense sucks. And our offensive line might be the suckiest.
The old Simpsons adage, I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked. And that was Hamilton last week. And actually, Daryl Davis said it right in his column that the Riders beat a bad team. Now, yes, we should be happy with the win, and we are happy about the win, because 2 points in the standings means the same now as it does later on in the season against an Eastern team, but we did beat a bad team. But bottom line, you have to beat the teams that are worse than you, and the Riders did, so that's all that matters. But that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to our guests, Riders offensive lineman Darius Bladek and CFL Commissioner Randy Ambrosi for joining us this week. Coming up on next week's show, we're going to preview the Riders at Stampeders. Big, big game for the Riders, 1-3 or 2-2. Or 1-2-1, since Calgary seems to like tying all the time now. We'll have a rant. We'll have another entrant into the Hottie Bowl. We'll have our Coney Island Piffles player profile. Engaging with the enemy, that seems to be a hit, so we're going to keep doing that. We'll get somebody on from the Calgary Stampeders and see what else happens in the CFL this week and just have another good show. Thanks again so much for joining us. Follow us on Twitter at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
Follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I'm at CFL Hottie Bowl.
Give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Or on Instagram, just search PifflesPod. And check out the website, PifflesPodcast.com. And also, for every show link and website article that you retweet or share for the month of July, you get entered into the draw for tickets to Guns N' Roses. So this show, make sure you retweet this show.
Can we clarify that it's only the July articles?
It's the July articles.
So if you're sharing all of the articles and episodes from last year, thank you.
Please do that.
But it doesn't count?
Not for the entries. It's for July shows and articles only.
And only the ones from the direct Piffles Podcast account or Piffles Podcast on Facebook.
And you have to like the pages and follow us. So if you don't have that, entry doesn't count.
So many rules.
It's super easy. Just share and follow us. That's super easy, right? And you get a great prize out of it. You're going to get Guns N' Roses tickets. That's going to be the party of the summer here in Saskatchewan, and that's going to be one hell of a show.
I got nothing else to say.
All right. Well, with that, we'll get out of here. Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Bryn Werrett at Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out BrynWerrett.com. That's BrynWerrett.com. Thanks for listening.
We're a drinking town with a football problem.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.